Welcome in to My Guys in the Desert. Happy Friday. I'm Danielle Avari here at the VSiN Circa studio at the South Point Sportsbook studio. Today we have Jonathan Von Tobel in for the final day of the JVT Takeover. He's in for Matt Eumanns and Wes Reynolds also joining us again today. So thanks to Wes. Pacers Jazz going on right now in the NBA. It's not usually when we have a game going on during this show, so that's kind of nice. But Utah closes a 10.5-point favorite right now, about 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, 101-99. It's going back and forth here. Donovan Mitchell, though, keynote, did leave the game with a sprained right ankle. Woj has already tweeted that the x-rays were negative and an MRI is coming later tonight. Any initial thoughts on this, JVT, about how this will impact the Jazz moving forward?
I would think obviously, Danielle, with the compact nature of the schedule, even if he's healthy, you can expect some missed time because you want to make sure that these guys are very healthy and ready to go. I would say anecdotally, just the observation that it did look a little reminiscent of LeBron James's injury in the Atlanta game, just the way he landed on it, the degree to which the ankle was turned. So hopefully it's not a long-term thing. You know, the Jazz are a very deep team. They're very balanced, but they also need Donovan Mitchell in a lot of those games where they just need a bucket down the stretch. So hopefully he's going to be healthy, but I would expect at least a couple of missed games, just considering the nature of the schedule going forward.
And current score, by the way, Jazz 101-99, 6:52 remaining. I had Pacers first half in game, so sweating the full game out at 10.5. Pacers been playing better, JVT, since Miles Turner has actually left the lineup. The defense is worse, but the offense has been better, even though it's slowed down a little bit here in the second half. They've been playing at a much faster tempo. I think they're like second in pace over the last couple weeks here. So Pacers, I think they've kind of figured out what the offense, I think, wants to be, what Nate Bjorkgren, when they initially hired him, they wanted to do a little more pace and space, get up and down the floor. They've been able to do that with Miles Turner out of the lineup.
More NBA action going on tonight. A lot of 3-point spreads, it seems like, here. Clippers and 76ers. Sixers are the 3-point favorite. Pelicans, a 3-point favorite over the Wizards. Pistons, 3 points over the Thunder. Those are from DraftKings, obviously shifting around. But any other action for you guys tonight?
You know, I laid earlier today the New Orleans Pelicans 2.5 against the Washington Wizards. I think just from a matchup perspective, it might be a small nightmare for the Washington Wizards to keep New Orleans out of the paint. You're up to 3 pretty much across the board, Danielle. Wizards, you know, I think they're, what, 23rd, 24th in terms of rim protection this year, giving up about 65%, 64% within 4 feet of the basket. And last time I checked, the Pelicans had an explosive athlete in the range of 300 pounds that could probably destroy a lot of teams that are relatively weak in the restricted area. So I laid the 2.5 with the New Orleans Pelicans. And that's the only thing on my card, really, at this point right now.
Just
Wes, anything
the over
you or MLB tonight.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Danielle.
Saying any NBA for you tonight or MLB?
Just the over in the Knicks Mavericks game. I know Knicks have been kind of an under machine this year, but I do like the over here. Dallas playing a little bit faster since they figured out when they can rest Porzingis, when they can rest Doncic, and really the points per possessions have gone up. So I took the over with Knicks and Mavs this evening.
All right, well, let's move over to MLB really quick tonight. Cardinals-Phillies going on. The Phillies, -120, home favorite. But 3 MLB games postponed, all due to weather. Blue Jays at Royals, Mets-Rockies, and ironically, Red Sox-White Sox postponed due to winter-like conditions, because that's exactly what you would need in winter-like conditions is a pair of good socks. But no Sox matchup right now, postponed. Okay. So any MLB action for either of you tonight?
Personally, no. You know, my philosophy, Danielle, for the Major League Baseball is I will wait about a month or so, you know, let the end of the NBA season kind of come to its end. Actually, I also want to watch, you know, full disclosure, I don't really do a lot of preseason prep for Major League Baseball. I kind of like to watch these teams, and I'm also kind of a stat guy, so I like to have the numbers play out a little bit, larger sample sizes to get an idea of how these pitchers and how these hitters are actually performing. You get a lot of fraudulent numbers early on with short sample sizes, so that's how I've been attacking it. I think I've been on one baseball game up to this point this season.
Yeah, just for me, a little bit of a lean to the A's, perhaps -1. I think that Tigers bullpen is really beat up going forward. Both these pitchers, Urena and Montas, off to really rough starts, but I think the Tigers bullpen is in a little bit worse shape right now with how they've been taxed this week. They've had to use a lot of relievers to get some wins.
All right. Well, obviously, we have a lot more to get to. The NFL draft in less than 2 weeks, so we have some NFL talk and more coming up right here on My Guys in the Desert. Welcome in to My Guys in the Desert. I'm Danielle Avari here at the VSiN Circus Studio at the South Point Sportsbook Studio. We have Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT, our senior NBA analyst, in for Matt Eumanns and Wes Reynolds. And coming up at the top of the next hour, we'll get to talk to Aaron Rinning. I'm thinking we're talking NBA there. JVT?
No, Danielle, we're actually breaking everything in terms of, was it darts? Was it last over the summer that everything? Or table tennis? That
yes.
was what the rage was over the summer.
Maybe a little KBO talk.
Yeah, that's right. CR will be with us to talk a little association. Very deep card today. One currently underway. You heard the update from Danielle. But we should update this further because Wes has a bead of sweat upon his forehead as his beloved Indiana Pacers in danger of potentially letting this one go. 106-99 is the score here. 5:15 left to go in the fourth. The Pacers at one point led by 17, closed as a 10.5-point underdog here today. So we will see if they can stave off the cover of the Utah Jazz and stay within that 10-10.5. You got 10?
I got 10.5.
All right, we're rooting for you, buddy. We're trying to take this home. I also need a poor performance from Jordan Clarkson because I have my Joe Ingles Sixth Man of the Year ticket. Jordan Clarkson is officially. I should start a new campaign, right? The other day, I waved the white flag on Harden for MVP. Let's start the new campaign. Joe Ingles, Sixth Man. Let's go. I'm in.
I'm with you.
Well, of course.
I'll wave the flag for you.
Of course, I'm in. I have money on it. All right. Other things that we should note, and for those who are just joining us who weren't with us at the top of the hour, the story out of this game outside of course, the betting implications for one contest is the fact that Donovan Mitchell did get injured in this contest, went up for a contested ball, came down on his ankle, twisted it pretty hard, immediately left the game. X-rays already negative. That's according to Adrian Wojnarowski. We do see this from Woj. Just a couple of minutes ago, actually, lower ankle sprain, and there's some early optimism that this isn't a major injury to Mitchell, sources tell ESPN. And that's a good thing. You know, I made the anecdotal observation that it seemed similar to LeBron's injury, Wes, and that's not the case. That was a high ankle sprain, so this is very positive news. Maybe one, two games, maybe none. Who knows? But that's very positive news for a team looking to compete in the Western Conference. And, by the way, just over the umbrella of all of these injuries that we have seen from all of these guys, throughout the NBA, we would hate to see another superstar like Donovan Mitchell go down this way.
Yeah, absolutely. The Western Conference is really stacked at the top. By the way, Jazz on a 10-0 run here over the last 3.5 minutes. Pacers had 69 points at the half, only 30 points here through the full third quarter and 8 minutes of the fourth quarter. So blue and gold offense has gone very stagnant.
Yes, indeed. Look like a bunch of construction workers out there with all those bricks that they're putting up, but we will see if they can pull through. Only 3:42 left to go. We got a lot of time left. A lot of time. That's like eternity in basketball minutes. Eternity.
It is. Every team makes a run. Isn't that what they say in the NBA, JVT?
That's right. I hear it's a game of runs. I also hear it's a make or miss league. There's a lot of things I hear about this league. One game underway in Major League Baseball. Top of the seventh inning between Atlanta and Chicago. The Atlanta Braves not off to the start that they expected, looking to right the ship. They are on their way, potentially, to a sixth victory, but they need to hold out. Top of the seventh, no outs right now. Runner on second with those Braves leading, again, 4-2. Looking to tack a little bit on. Runner advances to third just now as we speak. So a 3-2 count there with Swanson on, or at the plate, I should put
Cubs offense continues to struggle here in the early part of the season. Just two runs on three hits. Wilson Contreras did have a solo shot, but Cubs not getting a lot going offensively, and today no exception.
Shutout yesterday, 7-0. They played at 3 in a win over the Brewers in that middle matchup of their three-game set, then held to 3 against the Brewers in a loss 6-3 at the beginning. This has been a boom or bust offense for about a year or two now for the Chicago Cubs. You know, we talk about this league all about the uppercut swing and going for the fences, launch angle. Well, it does lead to some extremes offensively, but the Cubs, very much extreme in terms of what you get from their offense on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, they swing and miss a lot, yep. One of the most in the league, and also the fact that I was a little down on this team this year just simply because they've got some free agents. They might be trading at the deadline, so you didn't know if they could be sellers. So that's why I did not like them over that season wins of 79.5, even though I'm sure books mostly took over action on that win total. They always will with the public team like the Cubs. But I didn't like it this year. here, because I was like, if they were going to be several games under 500, they might be sellers at the deadline.
And just a quick note as we kind of bounce around the headlines before we get into our main topic of the first hour. Colorado Avalanche, just want to note, will not play until at least Thursday next week. Third player placed into the NHL's COVID-19 protocol today. That means three games being postponed. Kings game today and Sunday. St. Louis Blues on Tuesday. So the Colorado Avalanche in a COVID hiatus for all of you hockey fans out there. And with that, we get to the National Football League West as we continue our coverage of the NFL draft. Again, about 2 weeks away from the draft, the first round coming up a couple of Thursdays from now. By the way, NFL draft guide coming out too here at VSiN, so keep an eye out on that. So I wanted to discuss a couple of things because you and I have brought up, I think, a couple of times the two top offensive linemen in some conversations, right? Penei Sewell out of Oregon, Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern. And we talk about these guys in terms of, you know, Slater kind of biting into the apple that is Sewell's status as the top offensive lineman in this draft. The odds do reflect that a little bit as well. Sewell was as high as minus 1,000. Now we're talking about minus 500 to be the first offensive lineman taken. But I wanted to talk about these. As you watch your screen right now, the NFL draft prop shopping around in three different books that have these available, draft position props, Wes. And there were a couple of things that kind of stuck out in terms of at least the two top offensive linemen. We'll get to Micah Parsons as well, a good inside-outside linebacker prospect from Penn State, and then Jamar Chase, the wide receiver out of LSU. But let's talk about these two offensive linemen first. So Sewell, pretty static across the board, right? 6.5 at DraftKings, the highest draft position prop. Outside of that, FanDuel, William Hill, both at 5.5, over shaded on the 5.5, at minus 152 at FanDuel, minus 155 at William Hill, the 6.5 shaded to the under on Penei Sewell at minus 134. So there was a lot of ways to look at this. And before we get to the head-to-head Sewell versus Slater, I wanted to talk about where these two guys might actually go. And it's always helpful to shop around because what sticks out to, I think, a lot when you look at a guy like Slater is the differing positions, right? As high as 10.5 over at William Hill, as low as 8.5 over at FanDuel. So a guy like Slater, there should be no excuse for you, for the most part, to not find the best number available, however you want to attack where he's going to go in this draft. But let's start with Sewell, because if you look at the draft as a whole right now, we can black out the top three picks, right? Mm-hmm. I think we know exactly what the top three picks are going to be. You know, we can talk about the order. It's more than likely going to be Lawrence, Wilson, and then Fields and or Jones. So we black those out. So then you get Atlanta at number 4, Cincinnati at number 5, and then the Miami Dolphins at number 6 of the three next selections. We have talked about a lot the fact that the Atlanta Falcons really in a tough spot. Like that, that pick doesn't hold a lot of trade value. Top three quarterbacks likely off the board by that time. I don't think anybody's getting Trey Lance or trading up to do it at number 4. They likely build on the offense that they have, and you go ahead and you go get Pitts. Cincinnati is the spot where it kind of starts for the offensive lineman, because Cincinnati has been tied to Penei Sewell. We know how bad their offensive line has been, Wes. And again, at 5, you're talking about if you want to bet under 5 and or under 6.5 or under that 5.5, it'd be pretty big plus price. Might as well shop for Cincinnati Bengals to draft Penei Sewell props as well to see if you can offset, get a better number. But if you look at Sewell and where he might end up, your initial thoughts, because this isn't a knock on Sewell, I was teasing Michael Lombardi earlier today about Sewell versus Slater, but I do think an over on Sewell, just the way the board breaks, is the way I would look at this.
Absolutely, because Cincinnati now all of a sudden can draft Jamar Chase, correct, Joe Burrow's former teammate at LSU. That is a possibility. They need help at a lot of positions, not just offensive line. Conventional wisdom would say, okay, you got your starting quarterback hurt his first year in the league in his rookie season. You want to go get offensive linemen. They certainly could do that, but they could also go with Jamar Chase. So let's say Chase goes off the board at 5. Then you're looking Miami number 6. Everybody thought, okay, Miami's going to draft receiver. They need help for Tua. They need to get him another weapon. And with Chase and with Pitts gone, I don't know if 6 still has as much trade value. It certainly, I think, would have more than Atlanta at number 4, where they're kind of in that tenuous position. But does Miami all of a sudden say, hey, maybe we want to trade down if they're not necessarily in love with Sewell or perhaps even Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern? Maybe they decide Micah Parsons is the best player on their board, mm-hmm, and go ahead and draft him. So Miami is probably in that first spot where I think you could see a trade here as well. And if they're trading up, they're looking to get a quarterback, maybe looking to get Lance or perhaps Mac Jones. So I would lean with the over as well on Penei Sewell, and you got to shop around because I think that there's a big possibility Chase goes 5 to Cincinnati.
Yeah, and you know, and we talk about what's always important, right, is tracking what you see in the offseason, obviously, and how these teams address holes. Remember, Riley Reiff is now a Cincinnati Bengal.
Yes.
They went to go get him, so that's obviously a very big deal in terms of, like, I was listening to the, it was PFF's football podcast. It was Sam Monson and Steve Palazzolo. They were talking about it, and I thought Palazzolo made a great point where if you're looking at it from a team-building perspective, you sign Reif, you can kind of get away with putting off the offensive tackle in the first round.
Right.
And especially when you have a guy like Burrow, the connection that could be between him and Chase, it would make a lot of logical sense to pass on an offensive lineman this high and get what you consider to be a potential transcendent talent offensively in Jamar Chase in that spot. Which, by the way, too, it makes it really interesting, which is why I wanted to put Chase up here as well, because it kind of ties into the fate with a couple of these guys. His draft position props, 6.5 at DraftKings, under minus 177, 6.5 under minus $2 over at William Hill, 5.5 shaded to the over at minus 116. But I was talking about this with Matt Brown, who hosts Primetime Action with Gil Alexander on social media, and Jamar Chase seems very much likely to be the first wide receiver taken. Mm-hmm. There really doesn't seem to be any pushback on that happening whatsoever. And so I think a lot of people would balk at a minus 500 to be the first wide receiver taken. There might be some value in a really high price like that, just considering there's nobody really nipping at his heels, Wes. But again, talking about, and maybe I'm not using the term properly, but offsetting some of those prices, instead of betting, right, a Jamar Chase to go minus 500, why not go under 6.5 at like $1.77, $1.70, much easier price for you. And the more than likely spot is going to be that spot at number 5 with the Cincinnati Bengals, potentially number 6 at the Miami Dolphins, who also need some wide receiver help.
And also Detroit Lions right behind them. They were depleted in free agency in terms of their receiver core, so they need a receiver. So that's where you might get into, okay, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, the two Alabama wide receivers that I think by and large, if you look at mock drafts or just like the general ranking, regardless of position, best players available, a lot of people rank these guys maybe like in the high teens, you know, 10, 11, or 12. That's kind of where they're projected. But Detroit all of a sudden can say, okay, we didn't get Jamar Chase. He didn't slip to us. Now we may have to go get Waddle, mm-hmm. or we may have to go get Smith. So that goes to your point in terms of maybe playing Penei Sewell on the over here at 5.5. I know it's a little bit of a heavy vig at $1.50, $1.55. DraftKings, of course, has it 6.5 under minus 134. But there's somebody that's always going to be slated that's going to slip a little bit, not based on what they did wrong or if they had a bad workout or anything of that nature, but just based on how the draft board kind of shakes out. If there's not a trade that happens, then all of a sudden somebody's kind of got to be the goer down the board, and it could end up being Sewell.
And the one that has stuck out is we now look at Rashawn Slater and where he could go, because looking at how the board could potentially break, the run from 6, 7, and 8, Miami, Detroit, Carolina, very realistic cases that all three of those teams will need an offensive lineman in the mm-hmm. draft. And you can look at Slater and, you know, you look around, Slater is highly regarded by a lot of minds in yes. the National Football League in terms of being a very good offensive lineman. In fact, Peter Schrager reported last week, some evaluate him, and this is where this comes from, right? The Sewell movement, right? Or lack of thereof, excuse me. The anti-Sewell movement, I should put it that way. That he could potentially go ahead of him. Schrager reported that some teams actually like him over Penei Sewell. But to me, the way to attack it was, again, always shopping for your numbers. William Hill, 10.5, shaded to the under at minus 145. Given the value of Slater, right, some mm-hmm. projections of what he could be, given the fact that you could make a realistic case for Cincinnati, Miami, Detroit, Carolina, hell, I'll throw Atlanta in there, could use an offensive lineman, where you have a run of potentially 4 or 5 teams that could use an offensive lineman, Slater under minus 145, that 10.5 mark, Wes, that makes a lot of sense to me. Like, to me, there's right. some value in that number. Reading between the leaves on everything, I am surprised that that is not a price of nearly $2 on the under 10.5, or maybe at some point we start to see that move to that 9.5 mark, because you're talking about, when you're looking at number 10, that's the Dallas Cowboys, Denver Broncos, Carolina. Like, I think he's gone by that point.
Yeah, Carolina, you would think, would be slated to grab yep. one of these two guys, whether it's Slater or Sewell, assuming Sewell slips, if we were those scenarios that we propose kind of play out. Denver, look, if they want to strengthen a strength, they could. If Parsons is there, they could go there, but I don't think Denver needs help on defense. I think they need help on offense. Do they go ahead and decide to draft a quarterback and basically wave the flag, white flag on Drew Lock, or do they go with offensive linemen, because certainly they could use some help on the offensive line? Dallas, you would think, best defensive player available, whether it's Parsons, if he's not gone,
would he pay?
Or Pat Surtain, or those guys, yeah. Pay Horn from South Carolina as a corner. They definitely need help in the secondary. So to your point, I do like Slater. I think Slater's kind of going to be the buzz player as we get in this draft, where it's like he's going to soar up the draft board, where people thought, okay, middle of the first round, yep, you know, 16 to 18 type of guy, and then he goes potentially as high as top five or top six and likely top 10.
Yeah, and Micah Parsons is pretty interesting too, and that's why I wanted to throw him on there as well. Again, pretty static across the board, 11.5 both at William Hill and at DraftKings. Shaded to the over at DraftKings. It's a pick over at William Hill. You can get 12.5. If you want to go under, you can go get that 12.5 over at FanDuel. And that's shaded to the over, by the way. So you can get even money-ish in that range over at FanDuel on the under 12.5 for Micah Parsons. Parsons is really interesting because you read some of the reports, some of the character issues, if you want to say it right, the high school suspension, the potential hazing when he was over at Penn State, named in a lawsuit in 2020. Those are the kind of things that potentially knock him down the board. But I was talking with Adam Hill of the Las Vegas Review Journal, covers Las Vegas Raiders, has appeared on this network a couple of times. And we were just talking about the value of positions. And while Parsons might be a really good player, Wes, in today's NFL, pure edge rushers, I think, have a little bit more value. So, again, kind of to your point, right, it might not be a knock on Parsons that he falls, but I think it's just more the value of the position. And a name that has kept coming up in my research was Quiddy Pay out of Michigan, the fact that he could be potentially the first edge rusher, defensive lineman taken. I don't know about defensive player, but just because of the value of being a pure edge rusher as opposed to the inside-outside linebacker tweener that Parsons is.
And perhaps throw in Jalen Phillips out of Miami. He is kind of moving up the draft board a little bit. Has certainly moved ahead of his teammate Gregory Rousseau, who is now, I think, kind of in that 20-ish range. Maybe the Colts could be a spot for Rousseau. But when you look at that, I think Parsons, I think in terms of just a pure player rating, he's probably top 10 on everybody's board easily. But does he fit the need? It's all going to depend on how this plays out. Somebody in that top 6-7 is going to slip out.
Yep, three guys or three teams, you should put it in the top 12, could potentially need Parsons, but we'll discuss that maybe a little bit later. Also, some offensive players, Alabama players in the first round. When we come back, though, get our update over at Hilton Head, what's going on in the tourney over at the RBC Heritage. My guys in the desert here on VSIP.
Welcome back into the OddsTrader.com studio at the South Point Casino. Make sure you check out OddsTrader.com and download the free OddsTrader app right now so you can start winning with the up-to-the-second info you need. Now back to my guys in the desert with JVT and Wes Reynolds.
Appreciate it, Danielle. So we got a little bit of a sweat here. 21.1 left on the clock. 117-109 with Bojan Bogdanović heading to the free throw line. The Jazz potentially with both of these knocks can fall on 10, but they're still, again, 21 1/10 of a second left to go. The Indiana Pacers still seem like they're fighting here, fouling and trying to get off three-point looks. Tried to get off a three-point look with Holiday, didn't fall, but they did get the offensive rebound and the putback to make this an 8-point game less. So we are sweating this out down to the bone, down to the wire.
Yeah, I've got 10 in the hook in the pocket. I want the 10s to get there because I was talking about this game on Lombardi Line earlier this morning with Patrick and Michael, and it was 10 at that point.
Whoa. You were analyzing the NBA?
I know. I'm infringing on your territory.
Nobody's
now
allowed to talk about the NBA except for me, Wes.
I need to stay in my lane, bro. But, we'll see what the Pacers can do here. I think they're going to get a bucket right here and ensure the cover. He says, hopingly.
Look at that, another offensive
And they
board.
Do, 7.1. Go ahead and don't foul, guys. So 119-111 will be your final. All numbers will get there for the Indiana Pacers. A nice Friday afternoon NBA sweat, John Von Tobel. You can't beat it.
Yes, indeed. Also, I am not good at math at all, Wes Reynolds. So what do we got, a 119-111 final?
We do. So all the numbers will get there. It opened 9.5, went to 10, 10.5. So all numbers cover, and then all eyes turn to Donovan Mitchell and see how his injury status is going to be. But nice comeback from the Jazz because they got boat raced in the first half. It was 69-56 and held the Pacers down in the second half. Very good defensive team, Quinn Snyder has.
Yes. Should also know the game goes under the total as well. So 230, closing total of about 233, depending on where you look, 233.5. All right, my friend, give us the down low over at Hilton Head. What's happened at the RBC Heritage?
Well, the down low is Stuart Sink as two straight rounds of 63.
He
16
is down low
under bar. Yes, and of course, I don't play him. I don't go back for seconds here. Second week in a row, he was the guy that pretty much broke me even for the Masters last week, getting there at 8-1 for a top 20 finish. Ended up finishing tie for 12th. He'll make a return appearance to Augusta next year. 16 under par, 5-shot lead over Corey Connors. Stewart Cink, by the way, tee to green, second on the day behind Abraham Answer, who is in the house at 7 under. But Stewart Cink for 2 days, 4.81 strokes gained tee to green per round, 3.29 on approach, 1.21 around the green, 2.64 putting. Off the tee, not much. Obviously, he is a 47-year-old player, so he's not hitting bombs necessarily off the tee, but he's very accurate. So Stewart Cink, who got 2 more years on the PGA Tour with a win at the Safeway Open last fall, beating Harry Higgs down the stretch, is trying to get maybe another extra year here. He's like, I want to stay on this PGA Tour. I'm not ready to go to PGA Tour champions just yet. I'll stay out here till I'm 50, and then I'll go when I'm good and ready. Thank you very much. So Stewart Cink, 16 under par, another 63 today. Only hit 5 of 14 fairways and shot 63. How about that? But Corey Connors, another solid performance here for the Canadian, 11 under, 7 under on the day. He is second place. Colin Morikawa, 9 under. Cameron Smith got in at 71. We talked about his putting performance yesterday, where I think he went like 7 of 7 for putts inside 5 to 15 feet. That did regress, but nevertheless still on the leaderboard. Sungjae Im in at 9 under par as well, and then the 8 unders, Tom Hoge 8 under par, Emiliano Grillo and Billy Horschel still on the track at 8 under, just on the back nine, just a couple holes to play.
Yeah, some notable poor performances too, by the way, as you look at throughout the day. A guy like Carlos Ortiz, who shot a 68 in that first round, 75 today. Actually, there are three guys who shot a 68 yesterday and shot a 75 today. Von Taylor, Carlos Ortiz, Sergio Garcia, the more notable name there. Another big name that has made his way up their leaderboard, Tommy Fleetwood, at least had a very big day today. Not really in contention at this point, but one of the better days on the board up to this point.
Yeah, some big names. Looks like you're going to miss the cut. Harris English, yeah, who won the season opener, the lid lifter out in Kapalua, where our colleague Matt Eumanns is this week. Paul Casey going to miss the cut. Patrick Cantlay going to miss the cut. So you do have some big names of guys that were playing well. Of course, it is the low 65 that are going to make 65 and ties that make the cut on the weekend. Dustin Johnson now putting for birdie on 18, the world number one player in the world. He is 4 under, so he should be safe for the weekend. But Stewart Cink, the man of the hour, 5-shot lead going into Saturday.
All right, we will head back to the realm of the NFL draft. A couple more props that we should look at in terms of updating you and where they're at. We're starting to get more and more added to the board, too. I'm waiting for these head-to-heads. I want to see a couple of these guys matched up and see if you can get some value one way or the other, but we'll talk about that. Two specifically, though. One, total Alabama players in the first round. Very interesting prop that was put up at a couple of spots. The other, of course, total offensive players, one that's going to be pretty popular. It's a pretty interesting prop with a lot of these names that are on the fringes of the first round. We'll discuss when we come back here on My Guys in the Desert.
Welcome back in. I'm Danielle Avari. Football season never ends, and it's time to get your bets ready for the NFL draft. The teams are evaluating the prospects, and our football experts are looking for betting opportunities. We're looking at team needs, position props, and futures markets to find the best bets on the board. Get full coverage on VSiN.com, daily best bet email updates, 24/7 video access, plus we'll be live all night during round one with Brent Musburger, Michael Lombardi, Gil Alexander, Mike Pritchard, and all our VSiN football experts. Learn more and start your free VSiN trial now at VSiN.com. Now back to My Guys in the Desert with JVT and Wes Reynolds.
Well, Danielle, thank you. Always appreciate it. Always appreciate, by the way, a quick like up on social media. Danielle going out and liking my meme that I put up yesterday, Wes.
She never likes my tweets. I think she hates me. I don't know.
Say, I mean, I don't think she hates you, but I'm hilarious. So I think that's why, right? You can't really hold back from the hilarity. Made a fantastic, it always has been, Justin Fields meme up on social media last night. Go check it out at me, JBT. I retweet it, like it, whatever. It deserves more than it's getting. Regardless, let's take a look a little bit more in the National Football League, because we have a lot left to clean up in the NFL draft. First of which is one of the things that you and I were discussing off the air. Really wanted to look at total Alabama players drafted in the first round. By all accounts, DraftKings, the first one to put this one up I could find, at least at this point. So let's discuss really quickly. So 5.5, shaded to the over $2. Your candidates on the right-hand side, right? I think we feel relatively confident in Mac Jones, Devonta Smith, Jaylen Waddle, Patrick Surtain, and then you get to the question marks, right? The four guys that are candidates to potentially go in the first round, but are not necessarily, use the dreaded term, locks to go in the first round. You have Najee Harris, Christian Barmore, Landon Dickerson, and Alex Leatherwood. Now, I feel comfortable in reading evaluations of these guys, Wes, that Landon Dickerson and Alex Leatherwood, I don't think I'm getting them in the first round. There are a lot of teams that need offensive linemen at the back end of the first round, so I think there's a danger that potentially somebody reaches, especially when the evaluation of offensive linemen is not very, you know, similar. You can evaluate a guy however you want. But I think I'm relatively comfortable crossing those two out. Christian Barmore is pretty interesting because he has, by all accounts, been thrust into like a top 15-ish. I've seen a couple of mock drafts in there. The question is like a Najee Harris. Are you going to get Najee Harris in the first round? You're going to get a running back in the first round is a real question. But a team that has been tied to Najee Harris quite a bit has been the Pittsburgh Steelers. So if you look at this again, Mac Jones 1, Devontae Smith 2, Jaylen Waddle 3, Patrick Surtain 4. It's four guys. We need two more. Are we comfortable that Harris and Barmore are going to be going in the first round?
I'm not necessarily. I think Barmore is going to go. Alex Leatherwood is possible
right
near the end of the first round. But in terms of Harris, I think that that's where they're kind of looking at the at that standpoint, juicing it to the over, that somebody's going to take Najee Harris, one of the higher end teams that are drafting lower in the first round. But it just strikes me, honestly, as okay, that's going to be the day two story, because how many times do we see this? This skill position player is supposed to go at the end of the first round. They take somebody that was a little bit off the grid for the viewer, and then it's like, oh wow, he didn't go in the first round, and then that's the day two story in the second round. Like, okay, where is Najee Harris and Travis Etienne going to go? And they probably go in like the first 5 to 10 picks in the second round. And I could certainly see that happening, because if you look at who you would think, I guess, would need a running back. You kind of talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers, as they did not run the ball. James Conner now recently just signed with Arizona this week. So you can also have these teams that want to pair running backs. Maybe Miami waits until the second round and grabs either Etienne or Harris to go with Myles Gaskin and give them a little bit more of a 1-2 punch, help Tua out. So I'm not convinced that Harris is going to go in the first round.
Yeah, I think, and too, just from a comp perspective, and there's a lot of comps that have been comparing Etienne to an Alvin Kamara type, right? Like a really well-balanced back in like everything that he can provide. Yeah, that's, I just think even from that perspective, you're playing with fire a little bit. And we could see, right, we've seen a lot. I mean, the positions that I think remind me of one another in terms of the randomness in which a team will pull into the pool and pull somebody out is corner and offensive line, right? We saw the Raiders do that last year, where out of nowhere you pull somebody out from the pool that I think everybody projected to be like a second-round selection, right? Offensive linemen as well. A guy might just test well, and when you bring him in or watch them or talk to them, and you'll just reach a little bit on that guy because there might not be that much of a difference between two guys. So I would completely agree with the assessment that Leatherwood burns you here too. And I think just from, if we're talking about purely the number, right, at over 5.5 minus 200, the 200 seems relatively rich if you're looking at what the implied probability is. One a little bit more maybe on the under plus 155. I think this will probably be a relatively public play that you might get a little bit more on the plus
you
price.
You kind of said out what I was thinking there in terms of the fact that I think that the probability it's there, and I don't really want to lay it with the over. I want to take the under, but I'm just not quite getting enough. You just got a lot of candidates, I think, that maybe not want to trade up, that are going to wait to see if one of these running backs drop, like the New York Jets. You could certainly see at 34 in the second round going ahead and drafting Harris or Etienne or someone like that. So maybe those teams are going to gamble, and they're not going to be willing to trade up for, especially for a running back in this day and age in the NFL.
So the other prop that I thought was really interesting was, and we have two sides of this, right? Total offensive players, total defensive players. So the total offensive players selected in the first round, you can find a variety of numbers in terms of the actual number, right? 18.5 at FanDuel and DraftKings. FanDuel shaded to the under the 18.5 at minus 128. DraftKings, it's a pick. William Hill has 18.5 shaded to the over at minus 120. Some spots actually have a 17.5, I think you could find out there too. So when you look at the total offensive players, what I found really interesting in analyzing something like this, Wes, was all indications are is that this is a heavy draft in terms of offensive talent, right? Mm-hmm. And that this is a really, there's a lot of skilled guys on the offensive end. But I think that plays out in the sense that a lot of the first like 10 to 15 picks will be offensive players. That doesn't necessarily mean that a majority of players in the first round will be top selections. It's just that there is no dominant edge rusher. There is no dominant, defensive back, ball hawk safety type deal. There is no shutdown corner. And so I think you might see more guys defensively start coming off in the back end. So I was looking through this. I put 16 highly likely guys going, or 13 highly likely offensive players from the quarterbacks, Trey Lance, Jamar Chase, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Kyle Pitts, four offensive linemen, Sewell, Slater, Darisaw, and Jenkins. And then after that, it becomes kind of like this like mix of guys where I'm not sure. 18 and a half seems like a pretty high number when you look at this.
Yeah, I mentioned one of those defensive players, Greg Russo out of Miami, the defensive end. There's a lot of those guys that I think are rated about equal, where you can see them in the second half of the draft, or second half of the first round, rather, really go. A lot of corners, maybe a couple guys slip, like Kwity-Paye out of Michigan. Maybe he slips into the back half of the first round. And that's where I think you're going to see a lot of these DBs, where a lot of these defensive ends, as well defensive tackles go. There just aren't the higher end guys really at those positions. So I think that there is a little bit of a bias in the line in terms of offensive players, but all of a sudden you're going to see that offensive talent dry up.
Yep. All right. Well, the Braves attacked one more on its bottom of the eighth inning, 5-2 lead for Atlanta. When we come back, we will get to the baseball card. We will start in the American League. We do have some postponements. We'll update you on that. Three games that won't be played today. Really, really fascinating series getting started. The Yankees taking on the Rays, Waka and Nelson. We'll discuss that and much more when we come back here on My Guys in the Desert.
Into the OddsTrader.com studio at the South Point Casino. Make sure you check out OddsTrader.com if you haven't yet. And remember, you can download the free OddsTrader app right now so you can start winning with the up-to-the-second info you need. Now back to My Guys in the Desert with JVT and Wes Reynolds.
Noah Avari, thank you very much. Wes Reynolds, we have baseball underway. Cubs make something happen here, down 3 against the Atlanta Braves. Cubbies at home, by the way. 5-2, bottom of the eighth inning. We will see if we can get something in. Regardless, let us talk about the games that have yet to be played here in Major League Baseball. Shockingly, a very deep evening card. Usually get like 20 games in the day.
Even with all the rainouts.
Right, yeah, we actually got a really good card here. So let's start in the American League, work our way around the National League in the second hour. And by the way, for those who are watching, Aaron Renning is going to join us in a couple of minutes, top of the next hour, to discuss the NBA card. New York and Tampa Bay. Let's start here. Yankees open up most spots, about $1.55 favorite against the Tampa Bay Rays. Wes, I'm looking right now. We're talking about -150, -154. So not a lot of movement here. Westgate looks like is down to about $1.50 here on the New York Yankees. Waka versus Nelson. Now, the last time we saw Michael Waka for the Tampa Bay Rays, it was much better than the time we saw against Boston, at least from an earned run perspective, but still not the best, right? 3 hits compared to the 8 he gave up the Red Sox loss. 3 earned runs, a homer, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. Clearly walking out the same guy we were used to. Swing and misses really aren't there. The contact at least was really up in that Red Sox game. How do you think he handles this Yankees lineup?
Well, they're going to need him to be better than really the whole staff has been the last few games for the Rays. Other of pitchers not named Tyler Glasnow, Rays have given up 27 runs in 4 games, so it's really been...
By the way, the Rangers were a majority of those games.
Yes, the Rangers who weren't hitting at all, right. Really. Found the recipe against the Rays. Rays did get 2 of 3 at the Trop over the Yankees last week, but they are 1-4 of their last 5. Nelson is a bullpen guy that's having to make a start here for the Yankees, so I'm not all that confident in terms of laying the price here, but if you want to maybe play against Michael Waka and you don't want to lay 150 with a very unproven pitcher, you could argue for the Yankees if you like to play the team totals, which is about 4.5 juiced. I think I'm looking at the market about 135-ish, maybe some 130s out there, depending on your store. But that might be the way I would attack here, because Nelson, it's a little bit tough to back, a very unknown commodity that's basically making kind of one of those emergency starts here, and you don't know how long he's going to be in the game or if this is going to be really a bullpen game for the Pinstripes here. So did not get involved on the side or the total. Would lean a little bit with team total for the Yankees because I think they might be able to get to Michael Waka.
Matt Youmans taught me that this might be a Johnny Holstaff game. Is that what we call them?
Use the whole staff. Yes, absolutely. You could see it here.
I thought you would get that reference. It was a Youmans reference.
Sorry. Matt's not hip enough for the room like you and I, JVT, that's with our references.
I still think that Cool Hand Luke is a pitcher? Or is he a cowboy? What is he?
It was an old movie.
Okay. But what was he? Was he a cowboy?
That I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Right, so I'm not the only one. Thank God. He loves Cool Hand Luke. Humans loves Cool Hand Luke. All right, Rangers have won three straight. Let's talk about them a little bit. You and I were discussing, you know, how low the market had been on the Texas Rangers, these big beefy prices that they were getting against the Tampa Bay Rays, where they take the three out of the four, and now they're at home. Mike Foltynewicz getting the start against the Baltimore Orioles and Jorge Lopez. And oh, how the times have changed, Wes. From catching about, what, plus 175 on the money line price, now you're looking at Rangers minus 123 with Foltynewicz here on the hill against Baltimore. What do you make of this? Because this seems like a pretty big role change here.
Yeah. They had
about $1.25 with this Rangers team.
Yeah, I would probably only be on the Orioles here in this spot just with the role reversal here. And I kind of do like the under, especially if you can still get some nines. I think DraftKings has nine to the under. The win has nine to the under. You're now seeing mainly 8.5s out there. But I could argue maybe some positive regression for Lopez from Baltimore. Only a 4.39 on the xFIP. I know that ERA is very exorbitant on what we've seen on a couple starts, but you don't want to overestimate those necessarily. Sure. And Folty has been okay for Texas, not great, but would lean a little bit to the under here. But on the side, it would be Baltimore or nothing. I just think you have a Texas Rangers bunch that all of a sudden, would they take three or four from the Rays?
Yep, three
in that
now.
Series?
Yep.
All of a sudden that price gets going, and we don't have a big sample size because we only have about a dozen games on average for these teams. So you're going to get more market over adjustments, I think, in terms of just having a couple weeks than probably you should. So it'd be O's or nothing for me.
Yeah, seven innings strong, I should put it that way, for Mike Foltynewicz last time. We saw him scatter two hits, just one run. It was courtesy of a solo shot against the San Diego Padres. Three walks, three strikeouts. So we'll see if he can keep the good vibes going there. But a very solid outing the last time out, and a good bounce back outing for him after a rocky performance the first time we saw him. All right, we go Minnesota, Anaheim. Lewis Thorpe, Andrew Heaney will oppose one another. Now, I didn't catch this, maybe you did, because we either had a pitching change or just a crap load of movement here on this contest, because the Anaheim Angels at first opening price ISO was about $1.76. And now we're down to about $1.21 with Andrew Heaney on the hill. Heaney's not a guy that I particularly trust at this point, Wes. A really uneven lefty for the Anaheim Angels. Does have a problem at times in terms of giving up the long ball. And the first time out, three innings, that's it against the Chicago White Sox. Five hits, seven earned runs, taking deep ones, two walks. Bounced back really nicely against the Toronto Blue Jays. But regardless, a guy that, if that was the opening number that we saw here, that's a really big price for Heaney. You could totally understand the market coming back in the other direction.
Yeah, I wanted to take 130 here. Yeah. That disappeared very quickly this morning. So now in the one teens, I really can't take the Twins. I don't know if it's necessarily because the Angels are 0-3 against lefties and they're playing against kind of a weak contact pitcher here in Thorpe. Nope. That's not going to get a lot of hard hit balls because he's a weak contact pitcher. Minnesota, though, has led the league, I think, in hardest hit ball percentage based on their entire staff. So I believe there was one player out for the Angels or questionable with the back. I don't think that would do anything. We know Rendon is on the 10-day IL here. So, yeah, it was Justin Upton, but that's not going to be that much of a move. So, you know, maybe lean a little bit to the under here. I did not play this. I missed the number. Alex Colome is a little bit of a concern for the Minnesota Twins. He's already blown two saves in the first 2 weeks, so they're trying to figure it out. The wind reportedly is blowing out at Angel Stadium, but yet we're seeing the under juiced about minus 115, minus 120.
Yeah, I think the problem with the Angels, like not the one particular injury that affects you, but you're starting to get cluster injuries with the Angels, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not
they
only just
up.
Upton, Stassi's on the IL as well, Dexter Fowler, tears his ACL the other day with Upton. John Jay's actually now up there with them too. So you're just starting to see these cluster injuries at key positions that I think is probably why you're starting to see the power rating take a hit. And the point about lefties is very apt, because that's a struggle that for some reason continued from like the last year and a half for this team. Really struggled in those types of situations. All right, we'll move on from here. We go to Houston, Seattle. The Astros kind of scuffling suddenly, right? Open up as a $1.11 favorite on the road against the Seattle Mariners. Urquidy versus Yuhei Kikuchi right now. And right now, price you have in front of you between these two clubs, if you have it, I'm looking at $1.10 to even. Not really a lot of movement here between these two clubs in terms of the money line.
I want to take Kikuchi here because I think he's kind of been a hard luck pitcher. I think he's better than his peripherals if you watch him pitch. But unfortunately, this isn't the best spot, really, against the Astros, who are number one in the league in OPS against left-handed pitching, even though they have Altuve and Bregman and some others out. Seattle 6-2 their last eight. They've been pretty good against right-handed pitching. Had a really nice series, by the way, in Baltimore. The Mariners 8-5, who were the consensus, maybe not consensus because people considered Texas, but worst team in the AL West, I would say.
First place team right now in the AL.
They absolutely are. And then you look at the Astros with all the guys that are out. Maldonado out, Bregman out, Jordan Alvarez, Jose Altuve out. So that's a lot of guys out of that lineup. You understand that they would still be a small favorite, but probably going to leave this one alone. Although Kikuchi is a pitcher I'm going to look to bet on. I think he is better than a lot of his numbers would indicate. He was very much a hard luck guy last year, but this probably isn't the best spot, even with the Astros kind of hurting at the plate.
Yeah, and two uneven performances from Rukidi the last two times we've seen him, right? Both against the Oakland Athletics. The first time out took him 101 pitches to get through four and a third, gave him four hits, two earned runs, walked two guys, went a little bit longer the second time, six innings against Oakland, but still gave up four earned runs in that hit and also got taken deep at least one time. So not really the most even performances there. Let's talk about the Tigers really quickly. Jose Ureña will get the start against Frankie Montas, two pitchers that are off to really bad starts statistically for their respective teams. The Detroit Tigers, Wes Reynolds, right now we're looking at $190 on the Oakland Athletics with a total of about 8.5 between these two clubs. Last time we saw Montas, really good bounce back for him after getting toasted by the Dodgers. Six strong against that Astros team. Six hits, one earned run. It was a solo shot and five strikeouts there. You can kind of understand the price here given the start two for Ureña of the season.
And we talked about this game last night. I mentioned that Tiger bullpen had really been taxed. They didn't really have to use it as much because the A's jumped all over them, but they were going to have to try to be more judicious was AJ Hinch with that bullpen. Two guys whose average exit velocity have been down this year with Ureña and Montas. Ureña, the walk rate through two starts, 24.3%. That is not
nine walks
to,
through seven and two thirds. Has
yes,
not been good.
Yes, and this is a Tigers team on the bat in terms of batting. They've been hitting the ball out of the ballpark. They were entering play yesterday, I think league-leading 19 home runs. Ramos had six. Akil Baddoo, the rookie star, has had four. But they swing at some bad pitches out of the zone. So I don't know if they can really offset it with the power. I don't know if that's a long-term recipe for success. Lean the Oakland here, but the hitters have got to be patient because Ureña will put you on. You got to let a guy walk you sometimes, and I think they've got some experience in that lineup. Lowry, Canna, Matt Chapman, those guys will draw walks and be patient at the plate, so I think that could be a bad spot for Detroit. Lean, I wouldn't want to lay this price with the A's. Try to see if you can lay that minus one. I don't like to lay the 1.5 on the run line. I like to take it, especially in a low total game with the underdog, but I usually don't lay a lot of minus 1.5 run lines, so I'd be willing to lay juice at minus one, and if you could find that, that's where I'd go with Oakland.
Last update here, and before we get to the second hour, end of the eighth inning, Cubs. It looked like they might have been able to make some noise, but ultimately, if the rally falls quiet, Braves 5-2 right now. Again, end of the eighth, Cubs will have one more shot on it, but they got to get out of the frame first. Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson due up here for the Braves at the top of the ninth frame. All right, we come back, second hour, a lot left to get to. Aaron Rinning will join us, a couple of sides and totals that he's looking at tonight in the association. Very long and deep card. We'll see what he likes overall. Clean up the National Basketball Association, Major League Baseball card, and we'll talk a little bit more. We've been talking about these win totals. Let's talk about one more division, the AFC North. Coming back here on My Guys in the Desert.